From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we start today with Illinois government and politics. Last week, Governor J.B. Pritzker delivered his State of the State address and announced his budget plan for the coming year against a backdrop of pressures both economic and political. In the weeks ahead, as we've done in years past, we'll bring you many different perspectives on Illinois government, including how much money the state should be collecting from its citizens and how that money should be spent. After the address, State Senator Willie Preston of Chicago emphasized that the governor's plan is just that, a plan.
Let me be clear. Our work is not done. This was an opening proposal. This is not a time for celebration.
Preston was speaking at a news conference for the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus, in which he serves as the Senate chair. And on that note, joining me now to talk about the budget and more is State Senator Lakeisha Collins. She's a Democrat. She's the joint chair of the full Black Caucus, House and Senate. She's been in the State Senate since 2023, and before that spent a few years in the Illinois House. Collins represents the 5th District in Chicago, which runs from Lincoln Park, the Sheffield Neighbors area, south through Greektown and Little Italy, and then west to Garfield Park on the west side. Senator Collins, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And listeners, the General Assembly is in session this week, so in order to make our schedules meet, we spoke with Senator Collins Monday afternoon. Because of that, we cannot take your calls live, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.com. All right, Senator, I want to start with the state budget. I've often said if you want to understand what a government truly thinks is important, you look at how it spends its money. So what did you think of the governor's budget proposal?
So I was just telling one of my constituents who called about having a town hall to kind of break it down that it is a proposal. I mean, every year since I've been in the legislature, the governor gives his budget address, and depending on the climate that we're in, you know, he'll talk about what's happening in that time, right? But it's really just his proposal. And so after he gives his proposal, it is our job as the legislator to then negotiate with him or his team to, you know, pretty much get the things that our constituents need back into the budget or in the budget. So there are things that we agree on initially, and then there are some things where, as a legislator, you say, hey, maybe we can use some more resources here. So it's really just, a proposal, and someone who comes from labor, who's been at the negotiating table and led negotiations, you know, I already know and see through a different lens on how he's pretty much proposing the budget for FY26.
So there are some members of your caucus who've said that they would not vote for this budget as it was proposed. We heard that little bit clip from Senator Preston. This is the start of a process, as you just said as well. What would win more of your members over?
I think, honestly, you have to think about the legislator that every single member is elected by their prospective district. And so depending on where they are in the state, depending on, you know, the needs of their community, whether it's the Black caucus, Latino caucus, Progressive caucus, you name it, they're individually going to speak on the needs of their district. I think when we come together as a full caucus, there are some spaces where we need to further negotiate on and fight for. And there are some spaces where we have helped to change the trajectory of how the budget has been funded or implemented throughout the years of being there. And so, as a leader of the caucus, someone who they've elected to, you know, be their voice, my job now is to listen to those needs, work really hard with the leadership team and the governor's office and those in leadership in the House and Senate, and figure out how can we get them to become a yes. And so, again, I know this, a lot of the other members know as well, that this is his proposal. You know, folks feel that there should have been some more there, but it's just the beginning of the process. And yeah, so I'm always somebody who, you know, I'm hopeful, you know, when I go into negotiations.
Can you talk more about what you've heard from people about, you said there should be some more there. We know that State Representative Carol Ammons of Urbana called the budget proposal, quote, an insult to this entire Black community. I wonder what you think of that assessment and where you think, or where at least where you're hearing from others, if you don't think so, it fell short.
And so I can't really speak for Representative Ammons. I'm not in her area. I do know in the more rural communities, there has been talk, from a lot of constituents that they don't feel seen or heard most of the time when it comes to the government in general. And it's not just a one person attack type of thing. It's more so because they're in a rural area. And if you think about the rural communities versus the urban communities, kind of the same, right? So when we're talking about lack of resources, specifically if we're going to focus on the Black community, I don't think that no matter what we do, unless we truly make significant investments there, that people are going to be satisfied with what they've been seeing. Because we've seen with this past election that folks were just not happy, or they just felt like they were being ignored. They weren't really being heard. And then you have those who are, the everyday citizen that feels like, hey, we have this wave of folks seeking asylum, and they've gotten all these resources, and we've been fighting, to get some of these resources, but they just haven't really reached a lot of those folks back at home. And so I can say that for me, I've seen the work that we've done as a caucus. I've seen the work that we've done as a party here in Illinois, where we've protected a lot of, folks' rights, where we've protected a lot of funding and, pushed them back out to the district. But some funding is slow to go to some of the communities that we represent. And if I'm going to just focus on the Black community, some of that funding is slow to roll out. And so, yes, you do have folks who feel like they're still not getting enough to survive or enough to make them feel like they're, really being represented.
All right. Let me remind listeners, we're speaking with State Senator Lakeisha Collins, who is the chair of the Joint Illinois Legislative Black Caucus, Illinois House and Senate. We're talking about reaction to the governor's budget address from last week, as well as other topics. On that point, on the governor's point, right, you talked about increasing investment in some of these areas. He says, while the budget picture's not as bad as it could have been, the state's not exactly flush. He said, if you come to the table looking to spend more, I'm going to ask where you want to cut. I've made difficult decisions, including to programs I've championed. Again, this is the governor. Mm-hmm. He says, that's hard for me, as I know some of the difficult decisions you'll have to make will be hard for you. What did you think when you heard him say that?
I think that's with any household, right? I wasn't shocked by the response either. I think that if we're just talking about the Black caucus or any, marginalized group of people, you're constantly making hard decisions. You're constantly pulling back on the budget because there's just not enough resources. There's not enough, funds to bring back into the household, right? And so for me, my main goal as an organizer, as someone who comes from labor, is strategy. I don't think anyone wants any cuts to education, any cuts to vital resources to tackle the, public safety issue that we're having in our communities, whether it be on the west side or on the near north side or in the downtown area. I mean, I hear from my constituents all the time, right? And so I didn't take it as a slight. I just take it as he's putting it out there that, it wasn't as bad. But then again, we have a federal government right now who is talking about slashing or position itself to slash a lot of these important programs and services, healthcare being one of the top ones, that is going to affect this budget as well. And so he wants us to be cautious of that. We need to be cautious of that, because what his budget proposal was last week may not be what turns out later because of what may happen with the federal government. So if he's cutting off the Department of Education and we're not able to get those funds, then that means they're shifting the cost from the federal to the state. We can't sustain that on our own. So I think he's actually making a smart move there, while also sparking up the conversation to get people more, in tune with what's happening and how government intertwine with each other. One can't work without the other. There's money that's promised to us from the federal government that basically the new administrator is saying, I'm not going to pick up that tab. So since I'm not picking up the tab, you all deal with it. And we can't, as a state, handle that on our own.
Another area where he made that exact point is on the Medicaid program, which it's one in four Illinoisans. Every lawmaker represents people who are on Medicaid. I wonder, do you get the sense that your constituents you talk to about these issues, are they aware of what's happening? Are they conscious of it, afraid of it? Or is this something that's sort of flying under the radar so far?
It's not. Okay. I literally got an email and I'm getting phone calls. Hey, we need you to host a town hall ASAP. We need you to talk to the community about how this is going to impact us if we don't have, you know, the help from the feds, right? And so now I'm literally today, you know, talking with my staff and then talking to key leaders in the district about hosting town halls so that we can have these conversations. Because I think a lot of the folks who were angry at the Democratic Party, and I would say for good reasons, right? That's not something that I'm going to shy away from, right? They were angry at the Democratic Party, so they shifted. I don't blame them, though. I never blame the voter because, again, people want to be seen. They want to be heard. And so with that shift, now we have to educate folks on, you know, these are the things that are happening, and this is how it impacts you. And this is how important it is for your government to work together, no matter what level of government they're on, right? You pick somebody at the federal level, they collect taxes too. They're supposed to, you know, help us at the state, all the states across the country. And then our job is to take that match and make sure that we're putting them in the right places. So when it comes to the healthcare piece, we've done a lot of great work here in Illinois. And so to see some of that go away, it's going to harm thousands of Illinoisans across this state, thousands of them. And I have a sister who's a liver transplant survivor. She's been surviving now for about 15 years. And really quick, before Trump left office last time, she was in risk of losing her health care because he was trying to attack the ACA then. And I remember her crying on the phone to me. And that is what I told someone recently on why he was dangerous. Because it's only been 40 days maybe, 40-some days now, he's still got 3 more years. So what happens in those 3 years? How many people will lose their loved ones if he continued to gut the government like that? It sounds good to say I'm downsizing government and I'm getting rid of corruption. But what he's really saying is that I'm going to shift the costs from us, put it on you all, make you hate your government even more and make you think that it's them that's at fault, while I'm also collecting money to give big tax breaks to my billionaire friends.
You mentioned the people were angry at Democrats, and there was this shift. It was in Chicago. Uh-huh. It also happened in New Jersey, New York, other places that traditionally are much stronger for Democrats were less strong for Democrats. What do you understand was behind that? What message do you think you and your colleagues should take from that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk about it, right? And I would say that we're not divided. This party, this has been a party of grassroots organizing. At least that's what I could recall, even being a young person and listening to my grandmother and my aunts and them, right? I think what's changed is, you know, people have, it's been this shift from grassroots to elite. And I think that when I hear people talk a lot about, well, the uneducated voter versus the educated voter. And my thing is this, whether you're educated or uneducated, you know how you're being treated. You know when you're being ignored. You know when you're being isolated. You know when, you know, you have an issue and you feel as though no one is paying attention to you, right? Everyone cares about reproductive health care. I can't say that for every single person, right? But I know it's important. But does every single Illinoisan care about it is the question. What else can we continue to build on that we're hearing from folks on the doors? How can we go back to the grassroots organizing of the Democratic Party? How can we reach those folks that are not in these rooms, that are not at the galas, that are not sitting in the political meetings? They're just the regular everyday people that may be sitting outside talking to one another. Like, how can we reach those folks outside of this space? How do you invite them back in, right? that's what I think about. And I think that's what a lot of folks are missing. And I keep catching people kind of talking in that way. And it's like, you can't even correct someone without them thinking that you are against them. When really it's like, look, we're supposed to be family. We're on the same team. I'm just letting you know I'm waving the red flag. And I did that. Before this election took place, I raised the red flag. I said, look, affirmative action, you know, they finna attack DEI, they finna do this, they finna do that. Like, people are tired of, you know, feeling like they're not being valued. And Black folks, especially Black women, what I'm hearing from a lot of them is, we didn't even get a thank you, you know, for keeping the city blue, at least. We didn't get a thank you. So it's like, we have to find a way to address the elephant in the room. And we have to get to a place where we're being very inclusive of everyone. And we cannot get we can't get comfortable. And we can't ignore people who may not see eye to eye in that moment. We have to be able to continue to bring folks in and educate them on these issues and how it affects them. Because everything has a consequence. And it came down them. You came down them.
Okay, we need to take a break. When we return, more from my conversation with State Senator Lakeisha Collins, Joint Chair of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus. I spoke with her on Monday. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get back to my conversation with State Senator Lakeisha Collins. She is a Democrat from Chicago, represents the 5th District. She's also joint chair of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus. I spoke with her on Monday afternoon in order to accommodate her schedule. If you want to get in touch with us about this, send us an email. The address is talk@21stshow.org. One of the consequences we have seen of the election is that President Trump is really targeting diversity, equity, and inclusion policies.
Yes.
However, you know, and everybody has their own definition of what exactly that means, I think, in our split, polarized environment. But his administration's rolling back protections in government, in the private sector. His acting chair of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission even said in a statement, my priorities will include rooting out unlawful DEI-motivated race and sex discrimination. I wonder how you think about that. How do you reconcile that with what Illinois has done in the opposite direction in recent years?
I think Illinois has made it very clear. I mean, just look at our Democrat majority. I mean, you just look at the work that we've been doing. I mean, there's still a lot of work there that needs to be done. But I think that Dems have been very intentional. And I think it also has a lot to do with the people that our constituents are electing to office. You have more representation. And DEI doesn't mean that, you know, because I hear some of the talk and I do know how to identify dog whistle politics, right? Some people don't, but I do. And when people talk about DEI, they say, oh, it's a DEI mayor. We know the mayor, our mayor, is currently Black. Or they'll say, oh, it's a DEI AG. We know Kwame is Black, right? And really, it's about, you know, that company in particular wanting to sell their brand. And you might want to reach a more broader group of folks. And so you want to diversify. And it's really about, too, you know, disqualifying someone because of their race, because of their, you know, their race, their gender, you know, disability, and, you know, all of those things, right? And really taking a bold stance and showing that it's not just this one narrow vision, but it's a vision that fits everyone who represents this state. And so I think the Democrats have been very intentional about making sure that even though the federal government is shooting a lot of that stuff down, dismantling it and rolling it back, that we're continuing to move forward on it anyway.
What do you think? What people sometimes are critical of Democrats maybe is going too far and saying, like, you know, one of the examples you hear a lot about is the Biden administration had a program to help Black farmers. And if they would have framed it as we're just going to help low income farmers, you know, or farmers who have been disadvantaged in the past, well, you end up helping a lot of Black farmers. But maybe you frame it in a way that's less, you know, gets people's hackles up or something like that. What do you think of those arguments? Or do you think there's merit in going the other way?
I mean, we'll be talking all day. I know I don't have time for that. I mean, the reality is this. For me, I just wish we didn't have to go by color, right? Like, I really wish people would judge folks off their character and not the color of their skin. But unfortunately, that is what we have been basing it off of since the existence of this country, right? And there wouldn't be a need to say specifically Black farmers if there wasn't disparities there. There wouldn't be a need for DEI if there wasn't a disparity there, let alone affirmative action, civil rights, any of those things. And so you can go that route, but there's a lot of programs and there's a lot of initiatives out there that Black folks, Black legislators have fought for that everybody else still benefit from. But there are certain things that I would say that, you know, some of our sub-caucuses fight for that, unfortunately, Black folks don't benefit from because they don't have second and third languages, majority of them. But it's not about that. It's about making sure that there's representation and that there's resources there for those communities that are marginalized and communities that need those services and the help. And you have people out there that's willing to fight for communities where they personally are not, you know, benefiting from it or impacted from it, but they're allies and they're helping to be a voice to help them get those things that they need. And so for me, I'm always for anybody who's willing to stand up for folks who are, you know, who are being marginalized. But I think there's folks out there that's going to always call out something that they don't like personally. And in my opinion, just get over it. Everybody should be treated with dignity and respect. And we're all human beings.
You've mentioned a couple of times your background as an organizer. How do you think Democrats in particular, but the broader anti-Trump movement, which I guess goes from Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney to, you know, people on the left. How do you think they've done in organizing in the first month and change of the Trump administration?
I think that's what folks are missing right now. They want to see something. They want to see a turn up. Like, they want to see some action, right? It's that, and I would say that, and I think it's just because folks are trying to figure it out. I mean, for me, I take myself out of my role that I was elected to be in, and I always put myself back into the person on the receiving end. Do I want to see people go tit for tat, or do I want to hear facts? Do I want to be asked and called to do something? I don't see that right now. I was just asked that today, which means that there's a lack somewhere, right? And we hear our governor all the time, but he's the governor of the state, right? And I do see some of my colleagues here and there, they're hosting town halls, but it's like a party move. Like, how are we as a party going to attack this administration, mobilize folks, get voters who haven't been out and, you know, we don't know how long, but recharge them and then get in touch with a new voter base? Like, how do we, you know, maneuver that space? Have I heard any of that yet? No, I have not. Do I think it's going to happen? Yeah, I do. I do. Right now, we're trying we're having conversations, and, you know, the best thing for me, when I talk about being an organizer, I'm talking about somebody who learned how to mobilize thousands of workers to withhold their labor until we fixed the environment where our seniors were living in, right? We advocated for them to have a better living environment. We advocated to fix the short staffing issues. It didn't happen because of one person. It happened because we engaged the public. We got the public on board. We changed the narrative from people thinking that CNAs were lazy into the root cause, which was that there were facilities that just didn't care and didn't have the equipment to help or the staffing to staff the patients to give good quality health care. That right there, that we didn't have a lot of time to do that work, but we did it because we believed in our mission and we had a goal. You know, and one of the mentors I had told me, you marry the goal, not the proposal, because the proposal is going to always change, but the goal will always stay the same. And that's where Democrats need to be at right now. We need to have a goal. And we need to know that along the way to reach that goal, yeah, we might have to switch it up here or there. but we have to stay on task. We have to stay united, and we can't be super uber focused on every little single thing that they say or do. We got to pour the progressives in. We got to pour those far left folks in. We got to pour the moderates back in, and we have to be the party of the people again. That's where we have to be. And we cannot go off of personalities. We have to, like, seriously do a deep dive search on what this party is and what it means to the people. And at one point, it was the people's party. And it has to go back to that. And if we don't, we're going to continue to lose people from this party.
State Senator Lakeisha Collins represents the 5th District in Chicago. She's joint chair of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus. Senator Collins, thanks for making the time to talk with us on the 21st show.
Thank you. Thank you.